good to be with you this first Sunday in Advent. Now I wonder, what are you like at waiting? Maybe at the MRT stop, in a restaurant when you're really hungry, perhaps in a line at the supermarket. Well, I have to be really honest with you at the beginning of this talk and say that I am a really terrible waiter. I don't just mean somebody who serves you in a restaurant. I mean our smiles. I'm just really bad at waiting. I like to be efficient with my time, and I don't like to be late, and I don't like to waste anybody else's time either. One of my biggest challenges is hospital appointments. You know, when it's first come, first served, and I can't predict how long I'm going to have to wait, and I'm always worried I'm going to be late for whatever is next in my diary. But you know, it's never too late. I love the story of Margaret Chola, a grandmother in rural Zambia who waited until she was in her 80s to launch her global modeling career. We've got a few pictures of her here. She became an internet sensation after swapping clothes with her fashionista granddaughter based in New York. How amazing does she look? I hope I look like that when I'm in my 80s. Lovingly known as legendary glamour, Miss Chola said, "I didn't know I could have such an impact at my age." Now, I know some of us are waiting for far more than just a routine hospital appointment or launching our modeling career in our 80s. Perhaps you are waiting for a baby or a job offer or some test results or a relationship to come through. Life is full of waiting. I love the song we sang earlier, the family worship song, that has the words, "I can see the promised land, though there's pain within the plan, there is victory in the end." It reminds us that part of our faith journey will always involve waiting. Actually, if you think about it, a word of prophecy always requires a period of waiting. Otherwise, it wouldn't actually be prophecy. It would simply be a word of encouragement. So if you're still waiting today for something, know that you are in good company and you're not alone. Our reading today is from the book of Isaiah. It's a well-known Christmas reading. It's Isaiah chapter 9, verses 2 and verses 6 to 7. So they'll come up on the screen behind me, or do look them up on your phone as well. Let's have a read. "The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of darkness, a light has dawned. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be upon his shoulders. And he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the greatness of his government and peace, there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on and forever. The zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this." You see, the people in Isaiah's time knew what it was to wait. They were exiles in Babylon, living under the oppression of foreign powers. They were vulnerable. They were weary. We can imagine their longing, their confusion, their frustration as they waited year after year, generation after generation, for the coming of the Messiah. Some of those that Isaiah was addressing would have been born into captivity. They wouldn't even have known what freedom was. Others would have waited year after year, longing to return to their homeland, but never sure if they would even make it in their own lifetimes. And then God sends them a sign through this prophecy from Isaiah, his promise of a child. After years of just not knowing, it brings them hope in the waiting. The word Advent comes from the Latin word Adventus, which means coming or arriving. It's a time when we prepare and we look forward to the coming of Jesus, a time when we journey to joy. For centuries, Advent has actually marked the beginning of the church calendar rather than the end of our regular year. It is a time when we remember the two comings of Jesus. His first coming, when he came as a tiny baby into difficult and humble circumstances. And then we look forward with hope to the promise of the second coming, when we know Jesus will come again to make all things right. And then there is this present moment, the right now that you and I are living in today, the time between the first and the second coming, when through the Holy Spirit we can get a glimpse of the breaking in of a heavenly kingdom, but it's not yet with us in full, a time we often call the now and the not yet. Advent invites us to reflect on time in two distinct ways, and the Greek words for this are chronos and kairos. Chronos is the ordinary sequential passing of time, the ticking of the clock, the calendar days counting down to Christmas, the linear flow of history. It measures time quantitatively. It's where we get words like chronology or chronological from. But kairos, a concept deeply rooted in biblical understanding, speaks to the qualitative dimension of time. It's about the right time. The moment when God's purposes break into our reality in transformative ways. The birth of Christ happened in what St. Paul calls in the book of Galatians, the fullness of time. A kairos moment when divine purpose intersects with human history. As we journey through Advent, we live in chronos, counting down the days, but we also wait for kairos, those moments of holy interruption when God's bigger plan for all eternity unfolds right before our very eyes. Through kairos, Advent teaches us to enter chronos as a different kind of people. And so, like Mary and Elizabeth and so many others before us, we find hope in the waiting. We're pilgrim people. God is at the beginning and the end of our journey. And so our hope, it's not passive, but active. It's not despairing, but expectant. Hope breaks into our reading in Isaiah. And Isaiah tells us that the people walking in darkness have seen a great light. The people find light in the darkness. Have you noticed that Christmas is all about light? We light candles at home. We put sparkling lights on the tree. We see Christmas lights and decorations all over the malls in KL. But in our reading, light is much more symbolic. It represents hope and meaning. Isaiah doesn't just describe the people walking in darkness to represent their physical darkness. It represents sin, suffering, and an overwhelming feeling of being completely lost. Later in the book of Isaiah, we are told that in their desperation, the Israelites took their eyes off Yahweh and they began to look in all the wrong places for meaning, for guidance. They sought out magicians and mediums. They were looking in the wrong direction. But then the light breaks through and it changes everything. Actually, here Isaiah is so certain of God's redemptive plan that he actually says that the people have seen. It's like a sort of prophetic, perfect tense. He is so certain that God is going to bring about change, that he is going to break into their darkness. And we are told that it's going to come in the world in human form as a child. It reminds us when Jesus says to his disciples in the book of John, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." Jesus is the light who guides us and shows us the way home. Perhaps if right now you feel like you are still finding your way in the darkness, or you feel your life is lacking meaning and purpose, you need to invite the light of Jesus in. If you enter a dark room, you can't push out the darkness. You have to switch on the light. And not only does light show us where we're going, but it usually brings joy. So candles on a birthday cake, maybe sunlight breaking through after a storm, your iPhone torch in a power cut. One of my all-time favorite verses is from the book of James, who writes this: "Every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of the heavenly lights, who does not change like shifting shadows." So what difference will this light bring? What difference does Jesus make? Well, in our passage, it all hinges on this one little word in verse 6. It's the word "for." For to us a child is born, to us a son is given. And it's interesting that the child is born, but the son is given, because Jesus always was co-eternal with the Father since the beginning of time. And we're told in these verses that God is going to come, that he is going to be our wonderful counselor, mighty God, everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Wonderful counselor here doesn't really refer to any sort of human support or wisdom. It means a wisdom that goes way beyond our human limitations, a wisdom that transcends our finite understanding. It's altogether wonderful. It amazes. It brings light and freedom and joy in new and unexpected ways. And it's the same word that is used in the Old Testament for miracles or miraculous. It says this in Psalm 77: "You are the God who works miracles, who works wonders." Maybe you need that right now. You have something going on in your life where you need God to work wonders. Well, know that God usually surprises us, so often contradicts our own human understanding. But I promise you, it is good and it is wonderful. God doesn't waste anything in our lives, even the things that we have long forgotten, or we perhaps think that he has forgotten. My brother-in-law, Andy, left Oxford University, and after his degree, he gave a year to work with Jackie Pullinger in Hong Kong. Being a rather bright guy, he picked up Cantonese whilst he led one of the drug rehab centres there, including some gangster vocabulary. And after that year, he became an economist for the British government and then eventually a teacher. Over 30 years passed, and he often wondered if his experiences in Hong Kong were just consigned to the past. About a year and a half ago, Andy was ordained in the Anglican Church and is currently a curate at a church in Stockport, which is in South Manchester. Lots of immigrants from Hong Kong have come into his church. And a few months ago, a handful of young guys walked in, and Andy heard their accent, and he greeted them in his best gangster Cantonese. Their jaws hit the floor. They had discovered a Guailo Moxie. Andy has since run Alpha in Cantonese, as well as beginning a church service there in Cantonese, which has already grown to be bigger than their English speaking service. Here is the promo video for the service.
大家好，我系郭莫斯 Andy。 30几年前，神感召我喺香港服务过戒毒人士，上帝俾咗个机会我学习广东话。当时我从来冇谂过广东话可以喺30年后服侍到新搬嚟嘅香港人。 可能你想返教会但觉得英文好难。
飞华机会嚟啦。
而家喺 Stockport St. Mary's Church, 每个月嘅第一个星期日下昼两点，俄国牧师 Andy 都会带广东话嘅崇拜，仲有香港小食添。到时见。
Amazing is that? You see, we don't know what God is going to do with our experiences. He is the God of wonders. He hasn't forgotten you. He hasn't forgotten the things that have happened in your past. And he will be doing far more work behind the scenes than you could ever hope or imagine. Then Isaiah goes on to tell us that he is mighty God.I wonder what you think of when you hear the word mighty. In fact, the Hebrew word here for mighty is more often used in military contexts. But God's power here is not one of brute force. It's not one of military dominance. It's a power that triumphs eternally, promising lasting victory and peace. Psalm 46 gives us a glimpse of what this looks like. It says this, "Nations are in uproar, kingdoms fall. He lifts his voice, the earth melts. He makes wars cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear." God will bring truth and justice for all eternity, undoing all the human abuse and misabuse of power. And then everlasting Father. Perhaps the idea of a father is quite hard for you to get your head around, maybe based on an earthly experience. But you know, all human fathers, both the amazing and the flawed, and everyone in between, are limited by time and capacity. But God, he is our everlasting Father. He will never be absent. He will never change. And he will always love us, no matter what we have done. And finally, Prince of Peace. We live in a broken world. And the world will tell us to try harder, tolerate more, love better. And whilst we could and we should bring about change, you know, we can't do it in our own strength. We aren't enough on our own. We need Jesus to come and to bring restoration and reconciliation. The translated word peace here actually doesn't really do the concept justice. The Hebrew word here is shalom. And it's deeply rooted in God's faithfulness and covenant promise to his people. It's a word that kind of means safety or well-being or wholeness. Peace is what makes human flourishing possible. Bishop Anthony Pogo, a bishop in South Sudan, a place that has known ongoing conflict for many years, describes shalom like this. "Peace is sitting outside my house under a mango tree, while my children are safely at school learning." I wonder what robs you of your peace. What are you anxious about? Peace is not the absence of life's noise. It's not the absence of life's challenges, but it's being in the midst of those things and still having a deep calm and stillness in our hearts. Jesus calmed the storms. As our Prince of Peace, he died that we might know peace. So often we see he turns to his disciples in the New Testament and he says, "My peace I give to you. My peace I leave with you." Maybe you're thinking, well, if Jesus is coming, why hasn't he come yet? Isn't there already enough suffering in the world? Why are we living in this time of the now and the not yet? Why is he waiting? Well, because the Bible tells us that God wants everybody to hear the good news of Jesus. In Matthew 24, it says this, "And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come." If we want Jesus to come, we have a mission to tell others. It's why as a church we are so passionate about Alpha. Advent makes us ask ourselves, where can I carry his light? Where can I go and make a difference and tell others? And there's no better time than Christmas. You know, perhaps for you, it's as simple as getting one of those cards, giving it to somebody, and inviting them to Carols by Candlelight in a couple of weeks' time. It couldn't be easier. And Advent is a time when we learn to wait with hope because we know the ending. As Matthew says, the end will come. The final part of our passage from Isaiah gives us a glimpse of what that will look like. Isaiah tells us that his government and peace will know no bounds. There will be justice and righteousness for all eternity. I don't know about you, but I can only imagine what that will be like, because none of us can truly know. But we can trust in the promise. And you know, hope is not the same as planning. We cannot speculate or make a calculated risk based on our previous experience. It's not like me in the hospital queue trying to hedge my bets. Actually, humanly speaking, hope is quite hard to get our heads around. Why? Because hope is about something that is not only completely new, but something that is innately good. Something that will make everything right again. Our world needs hope. Sometimes we get glimpses of it, but don't yet experience it in full. Those kairos moments, perhaps when we're worshipping or when we're surrounded by all the people that we love and our hearts are full. Those moments of joy give us a glimpse of heaven and fuel our hope in the knowledge that it is going to be amazing, even if we don't fully understand it yet. But for now, whilst we live in this time of the now and the not yet, there will be pain, there will be disappointment. Perhaps sometimes you feel that longing, a yearning for something that truly satisfies, but it feels just beyond your grasp. C.S. Lewis puts it like this. The fact that our hearts yearn for something earth can't supply is proof that heaven must be our home. Advent is a time when we acknowledge our deep spiritual yearning for Christ. But because we trust in the promise, because we know it is coming, we learn to wait with purpose, with contentment. You know, if life is like an Advent calendar, we don't have to open all of the windows at once. The world will say to you, seize it, do it, take the opportunity, FOMO, because this world, well, this is it. But just as God fulfilled his promise to the Israelites in the Old Testament, he will fulfill his promises to us in the New Testament. And so actually, this world isn't it. It doesn't even come close. He will come again, and there will be a new heaven and a new earth. Every year at Christmas, we sing, a thrill of hope, a weary world rejoices, for yonder breaks a new and glorious morn. We love Christmas because our waiting shifts from empty longing to certain hope. It changes us. Perhaps you are waiting for something and you don't know what it is, but you know it's going to be worth the wait. After years of being in Malaysia, well, 10 years of being in Malaysia, I can confidently tell you that my favorite Malaysian food is nasi lemak. Mm-hmm. Okay, I don't want you to think about lunch now. You know that soft, fluffy coconut rice, the sweet but spicy sambal, the crunchy ikan bilis, trying to convince myself that those three pieces of cucumber and egg make it healthy. I enjoy it so much that I'm happy to wait for it. Why? Because there's hope in the waiting. Unlike the hospital line, I know what's coming. And I would go as far as to say that there's even joy in the anticipation. And when finally I sit down with that plate of nasi lemak in front of me, well, it's definitely worth the wait. Yeah, you're not allowed to think about lunch right now. There is a good reason why Jesus tells us to enter the kingdom of God like a child. Because what do children always say when they're on a long journey? Are we nearly there yet? Whilst they know they may still have a long journey ahead of them, they don't doubt that they will reach their destination. Habakkuk writes this, "For though it lingers, wait for it, for it will certainly come." Because Isaiah tells us right at the end of our passage, the zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this. The ultimate hope, the promise is fulfilled at the cross. Jesus came that very first Christmas. He lived, died on the cross, rose again from the dead so that we can know our hope is real. We may be waiting, but we are certain of our destination and what we're waiting for. I wonder, is there an area in your life where you've lost hope? Or perhaps you've waited so long that, like the Israelites, you're looking for an answer or an alternative in all the wrong places. Whatever it is, perhaps today is the day that you give it back to the Lord and you say, "I'm choosing to trust you whilst I wait." You know, the Israelites waited 70 years before returning from exile. And for 2,000 years, Christians right across the world have celebrated the birth of Jesus as we wait together for him to come again. Perhaps today you can reframe your waiting and think about how you might bring light into the life of somebody else as you wait. Every single one of us can make a difference, even if it's just in one person's life. And even if we don't see the impact of it in our own lifetimes. I believe God uses everything in our lives. Nothing is wasted. I'd love to end with this story. Back in 1847, in a small French village called Roquemaure, a local priest was planning a Thanksgiving service to celebrate the completion of his organ renovations that Christmas. So he asked his godson, Placide Capot, a local wine merchant and part-time poet, if he would write some words to commemorate the occasion. The story goes that on an overnight carriage to Paris, Placide, the non-church-going godson, wrote the words Minuit Chrétien, which roughly translated means Christians, it's midnight. As he wasn't a musician, Placide asked his friend and composer, Adolphe Adams, also not a churchgoer, if he would set the words to music. And the song premiered in 1847. It was instantly popular, but sadly, when word got out that the composer and the author weren't religious, it was banned from churches right across France. However, all was not lost. A few years later, a minister in Boston, Massachusetts, a man called John Sullivan Dwight, stumbled across a copy of the score. And as a man passionate about the abolition of slavery, he was so moved by the words that he translated it into English so that it could be sung in his own church that Christmas. From there on, the song became increasingly popular. In 1906, on Christmas Eve, a guy called Reginald Fessenden, a Canadian inventor who pioneered using radio to transmit human sound, chose to play this carol on his violin as the first piece of music ever to be played on the airwaves. Since then, it has become probably the most sung carol of all time. Mariah Carey, Celine Dion, Pentatonix, Michael Bublé, Christina Aguilera, Pavarotti, they have all done a cover. And the song? O Holy Night. Can you imagine If each of these men in the story could have seen the impact that their one song would have on the world. This story reminds us that God can use any one of us to bring joy and light and hope into a weary world as we wait for him to come. Emmanuel, God with us. Shall we pray?